Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There's a new acronym floating around the marketing world, KGOY or KGOY. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but it stands for Kids Getting Older, Younger. And marketers are targeting younger children for older items, push-up bikini tops, high heels, and thongs for 10-year-old girls. The trend toward making little girls sexy is especially prevalent in the United States. What does this mean for girls, and what does it say about our society? Joining us to talk about that is Professor Sarah Murnin. Sarah is a lead researcher on a new study analyzing the presence of sexualizing characteristics in girls' clothing. She is a social psychologist and teaches at Kenyon College. And we welcome you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Professor Emerita Linda Smolak. Linda is worked on the study with Sarah Murnin. Her field of research is on body image and body change strategies. She also teaches courses at Kenyon College, and I want to welcome you to the show, Linda.
Thank you.
One of your first tasks in the study was to define what sexualized clothing is.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, how did you even start doing that? Because it's such a subjective thing in a way.
It is. And what we really wanted to do with the study is document the presence of sexualizing characteristics in clothing available for preteen girls. Because there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that this was happening, but we wanted to actually see if we could measure this. So we had a research team of students that were meeting over the course of a semester. We looked at what people had done with adult women's clothing in past research, and we did a lot of observation of what's out there on the internet. And we came up with this definition that clothing that emphasizes a sexualized body part or tries to actually, you know, create the look of breasts on a girl, for example, or if it reveals a sexualized body part, a bikini bathing suit, for example, if it has characteristics that are typically associated with sexiness, like a red lingerie-looking type of dress, or if it had sexy writing. So that was our definition of what was sexualizing.
Did, when you were preparing the standards for this mm-hmm. research, did sometimes people not agree and didn't get it, what you were talking about, younger people maybe?
Well, with this group of students, there were about 8 of them, including 2 young men. And at the very beginning, I think we did have very different definitions. But after, you know, going through this for a whole semester, we did agree, and we came up with a very reliable coding system. So, you know, we do, and we have validity on it, too, that other people have judged what we coded as sexualizing as, in fact, more sexualizing than the childlike clothing. So once you get used to looking at this, it's pretty easy to see it.
Now, sexualizing clothes in the popular culture is not new. My recollection is it really came out very, very strongly in the 80s, particularly mm-hmm. with the music videos. Madonna was great mm-hmm. at it. There are many, many others. So what's the distinction between being exposed to those images and actually wearing sexualized garments yourself as a child?
Well, I think what you've mentioned is really the huge change right now. It used to be that these sexual clothes were available mainly for adults. But part of what's changed in the image of adult is that we value youth so much that the ideal-looking woman is really a 16 or 17-year-old. Those are the people that the little kids look up to, and so it keeps trickling down younger and younger, and the little kids are being more and more exposed to this image when the model wearing the clothes or the actor wearing the clothes is a teenage girl, and it's somebody they want to look like. So the difference between now and the 80s to me is the exposure and the perceived appropriateness for a young girl, an 8 to 10-year-old girl, to be wearing some of these clothes.
And the culture actually is becoming more sexualized than it was in the 80s. I mean, there is research that documents that. And people believe that, well, some people even talk about a pornification of the culture, that because of, you know, the presence of the internet and the easy availability of pornography, that it's trickling down into mainstream culture. So you have styles in the mainstream culture that used to only occur in pornography, such as stiletto heels and thong underwear and the idea of shaving pubic hair. I mean, that's pretty normative now among young women to do that. And you know, that certainly wasn't around when I was younger. I mean, that's an idea that is believed to come from pornography.
And even really little girls get on YouTube and watch these music videos. They're much more available than they were in the 80s or even in the 90s. So 8-year-old girls, 7-year-old girls will be on YouTube watching these videos.
Whether their parents know it or not, because there aren't any bans on that, like they're proposing in the UK right now. Right. We're talking about the sexualization of clothing for young girls, thongs for pre-teenage girls. Do you think it's no big deal? We want to hear, or if that's a double negative, sorry about that. We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests today are two Kenyon College researchers, Linda Smolak and Sarah Mernon. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. So thongs for pre-teenaged girls. What do you think of that? What do you think of padded bras for 9-year-olds? All of that, not even padded bras, padded bathing suit time. All of that's available now, depending on where you shop. Do you know anybody who does it? What does it make you think of? A major purpose of this study was to look at the prevalence of sexualized clothing among the stores.
Right.
How did you decide which, and you did it via website.
We did.
Which I want to get into later, the mm-hmm. distinction between the website and what you might find you know, in the displays at the stores, but how did you decide which stores to survey for this?
Well, we did want to choose national stores, and we did want to choose stores that cater to a variety of types of individuals, especially based on socioeconomic class, but also on the basis of what kind of image maybe they're trying to sell to girls. So we had tween stores, which we thought would be the worst in terms of the prevalence of sexualized clothing. And then we also had stores that are more like children's stores. They don't have an adult version. So an example
Gymboree.
Of a tween store, okay. Yes, Gymboree and the Children's Place, for example. And then the tween stores did end up being the worst in terms of the prevalence. And by far the worst was Abercrombie Kids, where we found that 72% of the clothing items had sexualizing characteristics. Across all the stores, about 30% had sexualizing characteristics. So you can see that Abercrombie was by far the worst. But there were a number of stores where more than a third of the clothing items were sexualized. So we wanted to have, you know, different types of stores represented, but we had specific hypotheses that the tween stores, which are trying to sell an image of an older girl to a young girl, would be the worst.
And let's get to that distinction between the websites and the store displays. Did you find, I mean, I know your research didn't go into that, but just anecdotally, do you think it's echoed in the stores, if you were to walk into them, is this the sort of thing you see?
Definitely. And that would be an interesting, you know, place to take this research further is, you know, we need to understand more about what is going on when people buy this clothing. You know, I'm sure that many parents are uncomfortable about the degree of sexualization in the clothing. What kind of pressures are they facing, you know, from their preteen girls about this? But I do think it echoes what's in the stores.
We do have to acknowledge, though, that the internet sales are an increasing percentage of all of the sales. And I believe this past Christmas, more people bought on the internet for the first time than in the actual stores. And the young girls can get on the internet by themselves and go to Abercrombie and see this clothing where they can't necessarily drive to the mall by themselves. They can't order it, but they can start begging for it, although a surprising number of them probably can order it somehow.
Sometimes. Robin in Springfield, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I just have to say that I'm really, really excited. I just happened to turn your program on this morning. I'm just really excited to see this being addressed at all. It has been a huge concern of mine. I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I absolutely will not buy into this at all, this sexualization of girls. I don't understand where it's coming from or why we're even getting this, but to me, it's so inappropriate. And I've looked at toddler clothing, 3-, 4-, 5-year-old, 6-year-old girls, mm-hmm. and it's so inappropriate to mm-hmm. be dressing a young child, a toddler, or a grade schooler to look as though, to be sexy. Why does a child need to look sexy ever, in my mind?
Yeah.
And my daughter's 13, and I promote the idea that she is to dress appropriately, whatever I deem that to be, because she is under my watch. I'm her mother, and I don't see the need for her to be going out and looking sexy for any reason at any time.
Robin, does she beg for the clothes? Does she want them? And do you get in arguments? I mean, you know, everyone gets in arguments with their 13-year-old.
No, not typically, okay. Because I have, from the get-go, since she's very little, I've been always very open with her about sexuality and about what's appropriate and inappropriate. And I can't say that she doesn't have wear a halter top every now and then. But I'm just really open with her about it. And I just, and maybe it's from my own background, I just don't see why we want to sexualize girls that way. That, to me, that just opens up this Pandora's box. And I don't grasp it. I don't understand it. I can't get a clue as to why we want to do that to our own daughters.
Thank you, Robin. I was wondering, is the box already open?
You know, can I say one thing, though, about Robin's comments, which I thought were really excellent? I think she raises a lot of important points. But one of the things we need to think about long and hard is why. Why do we want to dress our 2- and 3-year-old girls in bikinis? It's not because we want them to get more sun on their skin, and it's not because those are practical for swimming. Why do we want to do this? And I think that as soon as we start thinking about that, it underscores the fact that we need some broad cultural change. We need some broad emphasis on letting kids be kids again, as opposed to just trying to train individual girls to resist the message.
A parent would say, I'm just hypothetical, why would you get a leopard print bikini for your 3-year-old daughter? Mm-hmm. And the parent would say, because it's so cute.
Right.
And what are you asking them? What's the follow-up question to that?
Well, I do think that they need to critically evaluate their opinion a little bit more. And what we worry about the most with some of the sexualizing clothing, well, one thing is that just the focus on appearance so early is probably encouraging girls to be paying way too much attention to their appearance. And we know that self-objectification, that monitoring your own appearance, is very unhealthy. It can lead to body shame. It can eventually lead to eating disorders, depression, sexual dysfunction. So I think that, you know, parents probably think that this is not harmful, but it possibly could be. And the way that people are evaluated when they're sexualized, they are seen as less intelligent, less competent. So I think that parents maybe need to take this more seriously than they probably are. But, you know, we just need to criticize that a little bit more.
And I think we need to follow it up as, why do you think that's cute? What makes that cute as opposed to shorts and a T-shirt or something? And bring up that what I was just saying about, we don't really want them exposed to extra sun. It's not practical for swimming. It's because we want them to look like little grown-ups all of a sudden.
We're talking about the sexualization of clothing for young girls. If you have a question or comment for our guests, Professor of Psychology at Kenyon College, Sarah Mernon, and Professor Emerita of Psychology at Kenyon College, Linda Smolak, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go on Facebook. The All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page is ready, willing, and able to take your comments and questions. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, double dip recession. Is it here? Is it coming? And what to do? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 o'clock. This is 89.7 NPR News. And it's 79 degrees in downtown Columbus. It's 11:20. Sunny skies today and a high of 88 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 67. There is a chance of some pop-up showers and thunderstorms for Tuesday. Otherwise, partly sunny and warm, a high of 91. Partly cloudy Tuesday night, a low of 71 degrees, sunshine for Wednesday, and a high of 94. Get access to our station anytime online. Hear local and national news all day, every day, by streaming on the web. Listen to 89.7 NPR News online at WOSU.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 FM.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the sexualization of clothing for young girls. Thongs for pre-teenaged girls. What do you think about that? Or is it no big deal? We want you to hear from you. Give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Holly in Bexley. She writes, I'm a feminist and generally agree with the thoughts of the researchers. However, I find it ironic that fretting over what women and girls should be allowed to wear is a common obsession in both progressive secular societies and strict theocracies. I don't hear progressive researchers or fundamental clerics getting worked up over what men wear. Could your guest please discuss why it matters so much that what women wear as opposed to boys and men? Will this ever be a non-issue? Linda?
Well, I think two things to start. One is what we're really trying to focus on is what young girls wear when they can't make an active decision based on understanding the consequences and rewards of dressing this way, and when it's really the primary role they see in the media. So I think that's one issue that makes our emphasis a little bit different from what Holly's bringing up, though I absolutely agree with her point. We're worried that young girls come to see this as a natural way to be and the only way to be. I think that the other piece to this is that, and this is, again, part of what we're trying to bring to the fore, is that there's much, 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 and add 100 more muches to that, much more emphasis on girls and women's appearance as a primary role for being an adult than on men's appearance. And because of that, we tend to get focused on women's appearance. We are trying to argue that we need to do things that move us away from just focusing on appearance.
Right. And I would like to say that I do think we need to pay a lot more attention to men's roles, because while women are being encouraged in the media to see themselves as sexual objects, I mean, who is doing the sexually objectifying? And we need to look a lot more at how men are encouraged to play a particular role in society that likely perpetuates male dominance and the role of women as sex objects in the culture.
Angela and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to call and comment. I'm a local school teacher, and I see lots of girls in high school dressed inappropriately, and I realize that's a little older age group, but you know, lots of cleavage showing. The popular trend right now is very, very short shorts with like 1-inch inseams or shorter. And when, as a staff, we get together to talk about dress code and try to reinforce a better, just sense of self-respect in our girls and our boys, we get a lot of pushback from the parents.
Yeah.
They don't want us to enforce these rules. They feel that their daughters look cute and lovely, and they really feel like it's a sense of self-expression. And I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela.
I think that you're identifying a really important point, and this is why many schools have dress codes, and I know you're correct in saying that the parents push back on those. However, I think what you're also seeing is, again, how broadly based in the culture these images are. Parents look at their daughters dressed like this, and they understand on some level that this is what their daughters need to do to be popular, to succeed socially, to not be teased about the clothes they're wearing, to fit in. Even the commercials we see for laundry detergent now show the mom helping the girl dress in a very short skirt to go out with stiletto heels on, to go out. So I think parents think that this is a way for their children to succeed socially, and we need to help change that message.
Nancy in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
A couple things. Number one, you talked about the media and commercials, and I think that if people want to get some of the media influence away, they need to watch the commercials and then call the stations. For instance, you can't even watch a ball game with your kids that Victoria's Secret commercial doesn't come on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you call the stations and say, I'm not going to watch your station, if you don't start watching and be a little more responsible with when you show certain commercials, because everybody listens to that almighty dollar, the bottom line. And one other comment, I don't know why everybody is so surprised that it has seeped into the sexual clothing, because unfortunately we've let our kids do everything younger and younger, and I think parents are so busy and going so many directions with everybody working and everything that it's much easier to cave in to kids, where it used to be kids would, you know, ding-dong you, and you could hold your ground. But now parents just give in. And even when preschoolers are dressing in caps and gowns because parents think it's cute, it's too much too soon, and people need to learn just how to say no quicker.
That's an interesting, thanks, Nancy, for that call. That's an interesting idea, that it's not just it's not just sexualized clothing, it's sports. They got to pick a sport at the age of seven. They've got to decide what they're going to do for a career, you know, by the time they're freshmen in high school. There's this whole culture of ironically asking them to do more at a younger age, because, you know, back in the, you know, medieval, that, I mean, a girl was a woman when she was 13 or 14 years old, often, and expected to take on these adult roles. And that's changed, or it changed over time. Now it, at least in how we look.
And there's also just an amazing amount of commercial pressure now that didn't used to be there. I mean, starting in the 90s, we even have, you know, specific media sources that are developed for the, these preteen people, the Nickelodeon Channel, Cosmo Girl, things like that. So I think there's a lot of pressure that the kids are getting that they take home.
An email from Bob, so he says, related to this show is the quote by Lenin, a capitalist would sell rope to his own hangman. So it should come as no surprise that a capitalist would exploit young women, too, which leads us perhaps to a comment by Dee in Clintonville. Welcome to the show, Dee.
Yes, I was wondering, given the topic of sexualizing younger and younger girls, has there been any research about how that may then tie into the preponderance of child pornography? It seems to me that if we're dressing kids and little girls to be more sexually provocative, it seems to me that it would only be more tantalizing to people that might have that proclivity anyway.
Yeah, that is a troubling thing to think about. And there is also this practice where, you know, some of the fashions for older women are made to make them look younger. And some of the themes in pornography are to make older women look like schoolgirls. So there's this blurring of boundaries between children and adults that is very troublesome.
Thank you, Dee. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about the types of clothing that you looked at specifically in the study. What types of apparel tend to be sexualized most often?
Well, we did do this coding in the summer last year, so there were a lot of bathing suits, and we found that among the bathing suits, most of the bathing suits had sexualizing characteristics across all of the stores. So that was definitely a very sexualizing item. We also, though, found that dresses were very sexualized. Generally, clothing that distinguishes between girls and boys tended to be more sexualized. The least sexualized items were things like tops and jeans. So anything, you know, it's been long a practice to distinguish between females and males in the way that they dress. It hasn't always been true, but it has been a long practice. And usually for clothing for girls, it's designed in such a way, and women, to either, you know, hide sexualized body parts or to emphasize them, as we are doing now. So it tends to be the clothing that is used to distinguish between female and male that had more sexualizing characteristics.
You know, you just made me think of the back from, I think it's probably the 70s, maybe the 80s, the Brooke Shields, Nothing Comes Between Me and My Calvin Klein's. Yeah. And that was considered outrageous at the time and very much exploitative. I can't remember, did they pull that ad after a certain amount of time?
It was a long time. Everybody still remembers the ad.
Well, it was
And she was a teenager at the time.
Like a 14-year-old.
Could be. It was shortly after Pretty Baby, as I recall. So I don't remember exactly how young she was, but she was young.
And there are a long line of ads that have followed in that vein, and people have compared them to that particular ad.
And, you know, someone brought up boys' appearance earlier, and boys' clothing is really designed to be much more utilitarian, to allow them to play sports, to allow them to participate in life, whereas a substantial portion of girls' clothes is to make them look a certain way to look cute or pretty or sexy. And again, it underscores our emphasis on appearance more for girls than for boys.
You know, this is an obvious thing going on out there, and it's going on every day, and it's a very mm-hmm. popular show on cable, is Toddlers and Tiaras.
Yes.
And the whole pageant deal. I the first time I ever saw it, I thought it was kind of a joke, but it's not a joke. I mean, people are really, it's a big business, and people are really into it, and these little girls, what they transform them into is it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of out there, really.
This is probably the most extreme example. When people dress their toddlers like that, many of us are willing to say, that's over the top, that's too much. But when they dress their toddlers in bikinis, that's cute. So it's really all on a continuum, and it's other people doing the same thing. My granddaughter went to a birthday party for, I can't remember now if it was a 4 or 5 year old, and the main activity was putting on makeup and nail polish.
And again, our concern is that when you get girls socialized into this role very early, they don't have the critical thinking skills to be making a decision about this. So, you know, is this putting them in a role that's going to prevent them from adopting other roles in their life?
You talk about that. You talked earlier about the blurring, and, mm-hmm. and there is the tactic of mixing childlike polka dots and childlike
absolutely.
Colors, like the magenta leopard print versus the real, mm-hmm. you know, the more real leopard print colors, and sexualizing characteristics.
Right.
So that's a tactic that they
use. That's what we saw most often, actually. But in our validity study, what we found is that our coders did not distinguish between the sort of ambiguously sexualizing with the childlike mixed and the definitely sexualizing in terms of how sexy they rated those items. So I'm not sure that mixing something with a color pink is necessarily going to make it less sexualizing in terms of how it's being observed.
But it probably does make it more palatable
right,
to
the parents.
Or more less obvious, so you're not really thinking about it. Ava in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. My son and I were walking by the pink store a couple months ago, and they had these huge blown-up pictures of these little girls that couldn't have been more than 14 years old, and they're in bra and panties. And the one little girl had on panties that said, hold me down.
Oh.
And we were so disgusted. And so he called the store and tried to put it, you know, like complain about it. And they totally blew him off. And so he said, well, you know, how old are those girls in these pictures? And they tried to tell him that they were 18. And there's no way those little girls were 18.
Wow.
I mean, there's absolutely no way. And I think it just... The women are so sexualized in our society. I mean, even look at, you know, what is that, For Him magazine or Maxim
mm-hmm.
magazine.
Maxim.
It's like any women that accomplish anything, you know, be it political or talent as far as, you know, a singer or a race car driver or anything, anytime a woman stands out in society, it's almost like she hasn't made it until she's on the cover of Maxim magazine.
Yeah.
And even if you don't go all the way to Maxim, if you just look at a magazine like Sports Illustrated, their top seller is their swimsuit issue, and it always includes some women athletes like Danica Patrick or Serena Williams in various stages of undress and sexualized poses.
Yeah, there definitely is this tendency to be sexualizing professional athletes. My students and I talk about this in my Psychology of Women class, and you know, as far as the individual women go, you can see that, you know, they certainly have a right to do that. They're probably proud of their bodies, and there might be pressure to prove that they're heterosexual since, you know, their sexuality could be questioned. But it's just sad for society that because it definitely, there's research that shows that it lowers our perceptions of how competent and athletic they actually are when they're portrayed that way.
Thank you, Ava, for that call. We have an email from Angel. Writes, did you notice any differences due to class or race in what messages girls receive and where the messages are coming from to be more sexual? Watching Teen Mom on MTV, I noticed different ways the girls on the show try to be sexy.
Our study didn't actually take into account ethnicity per se. As Sarah mentioned earlier, we did try to include stores that might appeal at different social class levels, but we didn't have data on social class per se. What we can mention is that studies have shown that media that are aimed at Black adolescents and women, whether it's TV shows or magazines, do have emphasis on different forms of appearance, and the appearance is on being yourself and showing a positive attitude about yourself rather than on being thin or wearing a particular type of makeup. There are differences between the media aimed at white teenagers and adults and at Black teenagers and adults. That doesn't mean, by the way, that the message to be thin or sexy is non-existent in the Black media, but there are some differences.
And there are differences by different media genres as well that are important to look at.
Meaning?
Well, I mean, music videos are some of the worst. And in rap videos, it is true that Black women are not portrayed positively. But in some other genres, like more mainstream magazines and things like that.
And there is research showing that Black and Hispanic adolescent girls who watch the television shows that are aimed at Black audiences have better body esteem than Black and Hispanic girls who watch the television shows that are aimed primarily at white audiences.
Betty in East Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I want to thank the professors for doing the research they're doing. Please don't stop. Please keep going. My daughter is already through her teens, and we had a kind of a rough time anytime we were shopping, and Abercrombie was one of the most difficult stores. I, at one point, as I was walking through the store, found a copy of Maxim just lying right there, and I thought, do the boys in here need this to get revved up in the store, or, you know, why is this there? I asked the manager, who was rather probably early 20s, and she said, oh, we just get those from corporate, and there's, you know, to be out in the store. The next day I called the company and did not get very far before they just blew me off like, that's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a big deal. It is a big deal to a lot of us. And the parents of those who think that their daughters look really, really cute in this stuff, if they were taken by a pedophile and who knows what happens, would they be wondering about, you know, all these messages that, you know, oh, she looks cute that way. She looks very appealing to the very people that you don't want to appeal to.
Mm-hmm.
And the also the peer pressure in school from others, I am sorry to say it was far stronger than I was. I tried.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in your research, I would love for you to go and find out who designs this and, you know, who these designers are and what goes into the thought of the design.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Betty.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something about Maxim because it's an interesting magazine. I mean, it just started to be published here in the U.S. in the 90s. It was modeled after a magazine in Great Britain. But, I mean, It's really interesting that we have this amount of sexualization of women occurring in the culture right now when women do have lots of opportunities they didn't have before. And some people believe that this is actually a type of backlash against the accomplishments women have made in society to now say, well, no, you really do need to pay attention to the fact that you're sex objects. So, you know, Maxim sells a huge number of copies every year. I think it's more than 2 million, similar to some of the very popular women's fashion magazines. So, you know, it just came about in the 90s, and it's very popular, and it's sold in more places than Playboy, for example, because it doesn't have actual nudity. But there have been a lot of content analyses of what's going on in magazines like Maxim, and definitely this sexually objectified image of women is very prevalent.
And can, Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. We're talking about the sexualization of children's clothing. What do you think? Are padded bikini tops for 10-year-olds going too far, or is it just for fun? Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also visit us on Facebook and comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, former boxing champ Sugar Ray Leonard.
There is no sweeter feeling than when you throw the perfect punch, because you get this little tingling sensation up and down your arm to let you know that you've hit the jackpot.
Leonard has a new autobiography. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes starting at noon. This is 89.7 NPR News. Based on her upcoming new book, Susie Orman's Money Class will reveal Susie's advice on what actions people need to take in light of the new economy. Tuesday night on WOSU TV, learn about what Susie calls the new American dream, which rethinks many of the traditional strategies we've been using to achieve our financial goals. Hear what actions people need to take in light of the economic downturn. Watch Susie Orman Money Class. It's Tuesday night at 8 on WOSU TV. It's 80 degrees in downtown Columbus and sunny skies today, a high of 88 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 67. There is a chance of showers and thunderstorms for Tuesday. Otherwise, partly sunny skies and a high of 91. Partly cloudy for Tuesday night, a low of 71 degrees. More sunshine for Wednesday and warmer with a high of 94. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the sexualization of children's clothing, and what do you think? Are padded bikini tops for 10-year-old girls going too far, or is it just for fun? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, and let us know what you think. Eric in Garfield, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to make one quick point here, is the fact that I don't know about the panelists, but I graduated in 1977, so I'm going to date myself a little bit. But when I was in high school, our star center for basketball team was 6'7", and the forwards were 6'4". They didn't even qualify to be forwards or even a center. But kids are so developed these days, and I joke with some of the older people at work, and we all talk about this occasionally, it's almost like they put fertilizer in the milk. Like, kids are just so much more developed, and how do you cover that up? I mean, my dad, about 10 years ago, bumped into a football player from Cloverleaf, which is in Lodi. The kid was a junior, 16 years old. He was 360 pounds, solid muscle, wore a size 17 shoe. I mean, so how do you develop, how do you cover this up? I mean, how do you protect these
And you're kids? Saying that conversely, or on the other side of the coin, the girls are developing as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing with the women, et cetera? And I'm not going to sound sarcastic here, but we had one girl in my high school graduating class that was quite ample in the bosom, but most of them were just average. Nowadays, et cetera, you can't even go to the mall and sit there try to figure out, which kid is 18 or 21 or even older. And I've seen some 14-year-olds that look like they're 24, 25. So how do you deal with it?
Thank you, Eric.
And I think you're right that this is a challenge. It is indeed the case that children are developing physically earlier than they used to. This is partially, by the way, because of the high amount of fat in girls' diet when they're young. But we now have girls who have the beginning of breast development routinely by about third or fourth grade. And among African-American girls, it's even earlier. But physical development, whether it's in girls or boys, and it sounds like Eric might be a little bit of a sports fan because he talked about both basketball players and football players, he'll know this right away. The physical development does not translate to cognitive and emotional maturity. And so parents need to be particularly vigilant to make sure that their boys who want to be athletes aren't getting involved with steroids and food supplements, a growing problem among adolescent boys, including in Central Ohio. I have some research on that. And parents of girls need to be careful to make sure that the developing breasts and body shape of an adult are not emphasized in a way that the girl is not ready to handle. One of the things we've known for many years in developmental psychology is that early developing girls tend to get involved with older boys and men, such that the average father for a teenage girl's baby is not another teenage boy, it's a young adult man. And so parents need to be vigilant about who their kids get involved with and how their kids dress when they do have these more adult-looking bodies.
From Twitter, we have a message. They say, a child in a bikini is not sexual. A predator thinking she's sexy is the problem. Put blame where blame is due.
Well, the predator is the big part of the problem, and we do need to blame people. Adults do know that children are not appropriate targets of sexuality. However, I would disagree. Maybe the parents don't mean it to be sexy, but then what was the point of the bikini? As we've already said several times, you don't want a child too exposed to the sun. Why would you put a bikini on them? Any of you who have ever been swimming in water with high waves, you know that bikinis are not effective for swimming. They come right off. So even though you don't mean the child to be a sexual target, it is what we sometimes refer to as early training or basic training for being sexy in public places, in places where there is an increased risk to the child. We don't want, by the way, all of sexuality to be determined by risk. We do want people who are preying on children to be taken out of society and to make our children safe. Girls and women shouldn't be limited because some boys and men don't know how to behave.
Sarah, did you want to add to that? Nope. Okay. Spencer in Lancaster, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say I'm the father of a 2.5-year-old, and we had a hard time finding a one-piece bathing suit for her.
Wow, 2.5 years old.
And it's like, I don't know. I mean, and if you got one of those bikinis, the little swimmer would stick out of the back of it. I don't understand the thinking behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to share that.
Well, good luck. I mean, we found one thing.
Yeah. But they're more, like, I don't understand why a one piece would be more expensive than a bikini anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it is really telling us something when it trickles down to that young of an age. What we did find in our study, by the way, is that the children's stores, you know, like Gymboree and Children's Place, will tend to have less sexualizing clothing. Among the bargain department stores, we found that Target was the best. So that would be my suggestion. I mean, there are places that do have childlike clothing, thankfully.
Yeah, some of the catalogs like Land's End often have one-piece bathing suits for the littler kids also. So I think there are places. I also would like to encourage you to complain to the stores where you shop and let them know, even if they blow you off the first time, the more of us who complain, the more options will be available for our kids.
Thank you, Spencer. Linda in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I'm a grandmother, and I am just appalled by what's in even high-end stores.
Mm-hmm.
I shopped for my grandchildren in Macy's recently, and I did complain because so much of the cute little dresses that were out there were sequined, and they were like lingerie fabric. And I thought, you know, okay, this is fine if you're going to be in a dance program.
Mm-hmm.
But not just for little dresses. I just like to, I personally am blaming the manufacturers for a lot of this because a lot of it now is made in Asia. What happened to our American manufacturers? I think that lots of times the buyers must be going to see what there is and they buy what there is without insisting on what consumers really want. I want to know what to do about this.
Thank you, Linda. How much do we know about the how the demand and supply works.
Well, we know these things are selling. Abercrombie wouldn't sell things, and Macy's wouldn't sell things if they don't sell year after year. And as several of the callers and emailers have pointed out, this is not something that just happened last month. This has been going on and getting more and more pronounced for the last 10 to 20 years. As Sarah mentioned, we can trace the beginning of those lad magazines like Maxim to the early 90s in the UK especially. So I think that what's surprising to some of us, including Linda, who just called in, is how many people actually buy these and dress their little kids in them. And I have grandchildren also, and when I go to their events, when I go to their piano recitals and so on, I see little girls dressed like this. Parents buy these clothes, and they don't have to. You can, as Sarah pointed out, shop at stores that don't sell all of these clothes.
Yeah, and I think some of the athletic stores, I mean, for a lot of these clothing, you see a lot of this for older women as well. And I think that's part of the issue, is that if older women themselves are wearing more sexualized clothing, it probably inhibits their ability to, you know, be critical about this. But there are, you know, I think athletic clothing, it can sometimes be sexualizing. But, for example, to find a one-piece bathing suit or a more functional bathing suit, athletic stores are an option. But we do need to know more about how this is manufactured and how this happens. So we have some ideas for future research here.
Thank you, Linda, for that call. From Phyllis on Facebook, one of the initial goals of the women's movement in the 60s mm-hmm. was to promote the notion that women should be comfortable in their bodies and appreciate the natural beauty of their curves. This notion, like so many others, has been perverted mm-hmm. to the point that a woman's worth is dependent on her sex appeal. This message pervades every nook of our society and is now destroying the self-images of yet another generation of young women. Clothing is the tip of the iceberg, and unfortunately, we are just letting it happen. Of course, some other people wrote in and brought up the brat styles.
Yes.
It's not just the clothes
right.
necessarily.
Right.
I think Jay Allen on Facebook wrote, the sexualization of children isn't limited to clothes. It's also TV shows, school curriculum with teaching sex ed in elementary grades, and their toys. What about the brat styles? From an email from Andrea writes, did your research find any common characteristics among the parents who allow their children to wear such clothes? Do they exhibit psychological problems or marked immaturity? If you didn't study the parents, I hope you will in the future.
Yeah, we haven't studied the parents, but that's definitely something that we want to do. And I wanted to mention, I do think the comment about the women's movement is interesting, because if you looked at the beauty ideals in the 1970s, for example, they were not as onerous as they are today, but people were much more outraged. So definitely our society has sort of presented some of these things as personal choice, and that possibly this is a way that women can be more empowered, it's to use their sexuality. But, you know, I think it is a, you know, it's not a good message. We know that it is not empowering, and I think that we need to develop more outrage about this.
And one of the ways, by the way, that we know, or we have evidence that it's not empowering, is because we do have evidence for adults, and now we have a study about children also that shows that people judge these girls and women as less competent when they're dressed like this, as less able to do things. So it encourages putting women into a more passive, helpless role that defines them only based on their appearance. And by the way, I love that quote. I was there for that 60s movement, and it's absolutely true. I think the word perverted is absolutely correct in what's happened to our attempt to give women back their own sexuality and control of their own bodies.
Yeah, I wanted to mention about the other cultural products. The brat styles, you know, have been mentioned. There was a task force of the American Psychological Association that met about this issue of the sexualization of girls, and they issued a report in 2007. And for those of you interested in this issue, you can get on the website of the American Psych Association and see the task force report. But they talked about the brat styles as being more sexualizing than Barbie. Well, we now have a doll that's even worse. It's called the Monster High doll. I don't know if people have seen
these. No, I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, a student of mine, Hope Boyd, has been looking at these dolls and actually, you know, quantify the amount of sexualization. And, you know, they're supposed to be monsters, but they're very sexualized looking and they're very thin. And then they're supposed to be about self-acceptance. But if you get on the website, what you find is that the werewolf doll actually shaves. You know, that's not self-acceptance.
Well,
kind of interesting. There's also a Huffy bike that's called Major Flirt that's on the market right now.
Janet in Dublin, you're on the air. You're the mother of two daughters. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for this research. My two daughters are in their 30s now, but I realized this problem, over 25 years ago it was started too. Mm-hmm. And I think the parents have to really get involved and be vigilant. What I did is my two daughters were involved in competitive horseback riding. Mm. And what I found was that all those girls involved in that sport, after horseback riding, we would go out to eat at restaurants, and they were dirty and covered with mud. Their hair was a mess. And they didn't care what other people thought because they had won a blue ribbon or they had just done a great jump, they did this through high school, and I saw that all of these girls that did the horseback riding went on to be highly educated. They all have advanced degrees.
Yeah.
Accomplished women.
Yeah, the task force that I was talking about in their report, they talk about activities, extracurricular activities like horseback riding. And we do think that, girls need to have something in their lives that doesn't focus their, an idea that their appearance is more important than anything. So, having something to accomplish is great.
On the other hand, and my daughter also rode, I know exactly what you're talking about. I think it is great for them to have and important to have these activities. But we do have to keep in mind how ubiquitous this pressure is. It comes from peers. It comes from media. It comes when they go to the clothing store. It comes from the dolls they play with. And so we need to keep trying to change that and change the messages that girls are hearing. Otherwise, even parents who are trying to limit the kind of clothing their kids can wear or are trying to put them in other activities, they're going to find it a tough go sometimes. I've been faculty advisor to the Kenyan equestrian team, and although some of the young women are exactly like what you're describing, and they are all at Kenyan, which is no small accomplishment in and of itself, many of them still are very obsessed with how they look, including how they look in their riding clothes. So it depends on how many messages get them. And I think when they get them, one of the reasons we're so concerned about the little girls is, again, because they can't critically evaluate this. It just becomes part of who they are without thinking about it.
Ed from Baltimore, you're just about all the time we have left. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. You talked about Maxim and also how the older women can't exactly complain when the way they're dressing. And it just so happens that Cosmo is out today with another, and there, of course, every issue, like his six secret sex spots and how to dress to keep him excited. Mm-hmm. And
usually have that covered at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, Cosmo's been out there for years, but nobody to address that part of it. They always focus on the male magazines because of the more severe nudity, but it's the background message that magazines like Cosmo put out there, too, that help keep that going, and I'll listen off the air.
Thank you, Ed.
Yeah, definitely people have been concerned about Cosmo, and there was an analysis that compared the message in Cosmo and Playboy, and it was almost exactly the same message. So we are getting this from all over the place.
Sarah Mernon, professor of psychology at Kenyon College. Thanks for joining us, Sarah, today.
Thank
you. Appreciate
it.
And Linda Smolak, also of Kenyon College. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.